comments and views expressed on The Kevin Smith Show are those of the people that make them and do not necessarily reflect the views of Kevin Smith, The Kevin Smith Show, or its affiliates or sponsors.
And welcome to the Kevin Smith Show, folks. Wherever you happen to be all around this gorgeous planet, thank you for being here at the Kevin Smith Show. And, it's not only is it talk radio like nowhere else on earth, but it really is the show where you matter. This is our 10th anniversary here at the Kevin Smith Show. The best we can figure, the best we can track it back, we think that the very first show we put online was May the 11th, 2000. There may have been one before that, but that's the best we've been able to track it back. You know, back then, I had no idea that this was something that was going to grow into what it's grown into, and I had no idea that I would still be doing this 10 years later. And so the day we started didn't seem like all that important a date to me. I didn't write it on a calendar anywhere. And so, but just looking back through the archives that we do have from back then, we have a few, it looks like that May the 11th of 2000 was the first time we put one of the broadcasts on the air. So anyway, we claim May the 11th as our birth date. And so this is the 10th. And it's been quite a ride, I can tell you that. Continues to be quite a ride. Beats anything at a theme park, I guarantee you. Or as Justin Wilson used to say, I guarantee. Now, we're tonight going to give you some information that perhaps you don't have. Some of you have been listening to this show since we first went online with it. And so you've been with us all along, and you know the story. You have lived the story with us. But a lot of folks listening to the show, in fact, the majority, the vast majority listening to the show, have joined us later. Some of you joined me in Macedonia. Some of you joined me in East Timor. Some of you joined me in Bali. And I mean, you've joined us at various points along the way. But those who have joined us, who joined this show and began listening to this show when I was in Kosovo, I hope tonight when I open up the telephones, anybody's welcome to call, but I hope I hear from some of you Kosovo people, some of you folks that began listening to the show way back when we first began. Doesn't seem, 10 years doesn't sound like a lot of years. But that was a long time ago. In when you start looking at programs, you start looking at radio. That was a long time ago, and we've just experienced a whole lot together. And for those who are members, you'll get to see some photographs from back then tonight. But I'm going to share the story of how it all began. An abbreviated version. I'm not going to spend 2 hours on that. We have some other things to talk about, too. It's going to be a fun night. We'll be back. let's just dive right in. You know, and the reason I want to share this is those of you who have not come all the way from Kosovo to today with the show, you have no idea how it all happened. You may have just a thumbnail sketch, but I want to share it with you because I want you to feel like part of the family. And I'll do this. I'm not going to draw this out into a long dissertation, but I'll do it in kind of an abbreviated form, but more details than what we have on the site, and more than you've heard me give when I appear as a guest on someone else's show. Back in 1999, and you know, really the show actually began in 1999, but we didn't actually put it out where people could tune into it until 2000. For me, the birth of the show was in 1999. In 1999, I was still serving as an international police officer, and I was in Pristina, Kosovo. And now, Pristina, Kosovo is the capital city of what was and what Serbia still considers to be the southernmost province of Serbia. Kosovo was not a republic. It was the southernmost province of Serbia. And this is where the Serbs say is the birthplace of the Serbian civilization and Serbian culture. And they date it back to a battle in 1389. Now, this battle in 1389 was against the Ottomans, the Turks. And in this battle, they had, up until this battle, the Serbs had beaten the Turks at every battle, quite convincingly. But at this battle, the Turks beat the Serbs, and it was a massive, massive victory for the Turks. There was nothing left of the Serbian army, and Prince or Tsar Lazar was taken captive, and it was just a rout, complete rout of the Serbs. Now you might say, well, why would they date that? Why would they pick that date as like the birth date of their culture? Well, it's something like the Alamo is for Texas. With Texas, you had the same sort of thing where everyone in the Alamo was killed by the Mexican army. And it became the rallying cry for all of the Texans, remember the Alamo. Okay, well, Pristina, Kosovo is 6 kilometers away, about 2.5 miles away from where that battle took place. That battle took place at Kosovo Polje. And Pristina, Kosovo, by May of 2000, I was back there. I had already been serving in Kosovo prior to going back in as international police. I had been working under the State Department, assigned as a diplomatic observer to the OSCE mission in Kosovo. And so I had been living in Kosovska Mitrovica, which is the northernmost city in Kosovo, and the headquarters for this mission was in Pristina, which is in kind of south-central Kosovo. So I'd already been there, and I'd already I arrived in a just an absolute blizzard. They let me off of the bus. They brought me from Macedonia to a place up. Macedonia is on the south. They brought me up to a place just across into Kosovo for in-country training, and it's called Brezovica. And it's beautiful up there. It's up in the mountains. It's a, in peacetime, it's a ski resort. So we had our in-country training, and then they put me on a bus and took me up to Mitrovica, which is all the way up in the north of Kosovo. So I went from probably the first town that you can say is a town when you cross into Kosovo in the south, all the way up to the northernmost city in Kosovo. They let me off of the bus. It was almost sundown, and there was a blizzard like you couldn't believe. There was ice all over the streets, thick ice, not just snow, ice. And the wind was blowing so hard that it would blow my 200 pounds, and I'd just slide on the ice. So I'd already been through all of that, and I knew what all that was about. And when we came back in, you need to understand, I was there for quite some time. And I was the liaison up in the Mitrovica region. I was the liaison between the international community and the Serb police. And then we had to evacuate. And we had to evacuate because NATO was going to bomb Yugoslavia. So they got all of us out and sent us to Macedonia, and then from Macedonia to Vienna. From Vienna, a handful of us were sent to Albania. And I worked in Albania for several months, and then that mission ended, and they sent me back to Macedonia. And then put me back in the international police, and then sent me back into Kosovo. So now I'm in Pristina, Kosovo, and it's a interesting city, a very interesting city. But in Pristina, Kosovo, I worked primarily as an intelligence officer. I was assigned to be the intelligence officer at Pristina 1 station. That's the main station. Before, there was an international police intelligence unit. Well, then they formed this international police intelligence unit, and my chief at my station told me to keep doing what I was doing. I was not in the International Police Intelligence Unit. He told me, keep doing what you're doing. I need you doing what you're doing. Well, that upset the chief of the International Police Intelligence Unit. And so there was this kind of ongoing friction. One day I was headed up the street for lunch, and I heard someone calling my name. I looked across the street, and it was the deputy commissioner, and he was waving for me to come over. This does have a bearing on the show. So I cross the street, and he says to me, I'm going to form a unit called Information Collection and Analysis. You're the chief. I said, okay. He said, pick five people. I think he said five. Five people, and I'll have them assigned to your unit. I said, okay. This unit didn't exist on the organization chart. This unit did not answer to the International Police Intelligence Unit. It answered to the commissioner. That's it. I had the deputy commissioner, then the commissioner. And this was being formed at the request of the commissioner because he wanted real, usable information. That office that I was in was outfitted in some strange ways. I won't go into it, but it was, we got things that we needed for the office in some unconventional ways. My computers in that office had access to the internet, but were not monitored by the server like everyone else's were, and I won't go into that. So then it was decided what happened was during the time, during the 1999 blizzard, we went without electricity. And we went without electricity day after day after day after day, night after night. And it was just so cold. I mean, it was below zero, and it was absolutely miserable. So, you know, you go home from work and climb the stairs to the apartment because there's no elevators, no electricity. Open the door, light a candle, go inside, shut the door. There's no running water because there's no electricity to run the city water pumps. You can't cook because the stoves were all electric. You can't heat up anything. You can't heat the apartment. It was miserable. Well, I found some ingenious ways, because I had already worked in the Balkans before. I found some ingenious ways to survive. I knew what to do. But there was nothing to do. There was no radio, no television. It was just boring. So I had brought my computer home, my laptop computer home from the office. The first couple of nights I played pinball. And then you can imagine after that I was bored. So I didn't know what else to do. At the office we had generators so I could charge up the laptop. And I could bring it home and I could, you know, use it for a little while. At least it gave me something to do. Well, I decided that I would just do some monologues. I thought, okay, here's what I'm going to do. I'm just going to record. I'm going to talk to this computer as if it were a friend that's just come over for a cup of coffee. And I'm just going to record it, just for fun, nothing else to do. So I took a little pocket-sized tape recorder. You've seen those. And I plugged into the earphone and ran the other end of the cord. I plugged into the mic jack on the computer. And then I used the built-in microphone on this little recorder to start talking about things that were just interesting to me. Now, I've always been interested in UFOs, extraterrestrials, ghosts. I've always been interested in paranormal things. And, you know, just sort of a fascination with it, I guess. So I decided that I would just talk about what I knew about those things and ask questions that need to be asked. Although I had nobody there to answer them, I would say it would seem to me that this would indicate thus and such, and that needs to be looked into. It appears that it would indicate this, and someone needs to look into it. And I just did these monologues. Well, when we went back into Kosovo and I formed this unit, or actually it was formed and I was put in charge of it, I had the laptop sitting on the desk one day, and one of the people that worked for me while I was out of the office, they had access and permission to use all these computers, was using that computer and noticed that on the screen, on the desktop, there were some sound files, so he just clicked one to see what it was. When I came back into the office, he was listening to my monologue. In fact, there were three people in there listening to the monologue, and one of them said to me, "Man, you missed your calling. You ought to be doing radio." Well, that sort of stuck with me. I kind of laughed it off, but it did kind of stick with me. You know, here's someone that thinks I did a good job with that, and I really didn't intend this for anybody to hear it. To make a long story short, I decided that I would put it online and just see what happened. Now, when we started, I was, as I say, I was working as a police officer, international police officer, in Pristina, Kosovo. And for those who are watching our TV line at this time, that's me in the sunglasses, and that's the police commissioner with his back to you, and Ambassador Richard Holbrooke facing you, shaking the hand of the police commissioner. And I was put in charge of his security while he wandered around Pristina, Kosovo. And so that's right outside of our headquarters. But and the reason I show you that, there are precious few photographs of me in uniform. This is one of the very few. But anyway, we got started doing the show, and I would go to my tiny apartment each night, carry the laptop with me, and in my apartment, I would sit there and do the shows. At first, we didn't have a microphone, but by the time we went online with these shows, a friend of mine had gone back to the United States for vacation. And so I had given him some money, and I said, look, go to Radio Shack and pick up a microphone for me. And so he did. And that very first microphone, I didn't even have a microphone stand, but that very first microphone, we still have it, and I still use it. Those of you that remember when I did the show a few weeks ago with John Hutchinson, well, the microphone he was on is that microphone, the first one. We still have it. It still works, does a good job, and we use it as a backup now, or if we have a guest in the studio. But in my tiny, tiny apartment, I could sit where I was sitting doing the show. I could sit there, and if I stretched my legs out, I could put my feet on the sofa that was across the living room from me. It was that close. I mean, it was a phone booth of an apartment. And we had a lot of fun, lots of fun doing the shows from there. In the beginning, I didn't have guests because there was no telephone service in Pristina, Kosovo. There was no telephone service. There was no possibility. You could get a mobile phone, but it was excessively expensive if I wanted to call the United States and interview a guest. I'll show you in a minute and tell you in a minute how I began having guests on the show. We'll be back. Welcome back. So we got it online, and I began to make it available for people to listen. Went about 3 weeks, and I hadn't heard from anyone. You know, I always gave our email address, and I said, if you like the show, I'd love to hear from you. And I hadn't heard from anybody, but I decided, you know, I'm doing this because I like it. When you're a cop in a foreign country that is a war zone, there are no movies to go to. If there were, you wouldn't go because you wouldn't sit in the dark among people that don't want you there. So, you know, there's not anything to do. There are no recreational things to do. And this was something I could do, and I could do it in my apartment where it was safe, and it was something to kill the time, and it was interesting to me. It was fun. And so I decided if I never hear from anyone, I'm going to keep doing this, at least as long as I'm in Kosovo. But about 3 weeks went by, and then I got an email. I got an email from someone in the United States saying, you know, I've been listening to your show, and I really like it. And it was very nice. It was very complimentary. And I got to tell you, it charged me up. I thought, oh, wow, at least we got one person that likes the show. And then other emails started to arrive. And over time, over the next few weeks, it continued to build. There was more and more. And I thought, wow, is this cool? So I began to think, you know, what am I going to do when I get too old to be a cop? Now, some guys continue being police officers, you know, until they're forced to retire or they're on a cane. I always thought when you get where you notice that you're just a half a step slower than you were, a quarter of a step slower than you were, that's when you need to retire. That's when you need to leave it, because at that point you're becoming, you're beginning to get to a point where you're more of a risk and a liability to the people you work with on the streets. So what am I going to do when that time comes? And I began to think in terms of, well, maybe, I mean, these people say they like the show, maybe I could do this show. Maybe I could make this grow into something where I could do this instead of being a policeman. So I sent email to, I went online and found some radio consultants and a couple of them in New York that were like, you know, really hot stuff. So I sent email, explained who I was, explained about my show, and asked each one of them if they would take me on as a client, because I wanted them to sort of guide me into how to build this into something big. Well, the first one that replied, several days went by and they didn't reply. And then finally I got a reply, and the first one that replied told me, "You don't have a prayer. You may be a fine person and your show may be really good, I don't know, but my professional opinion is you don't have a prayer." And the reason he gave was that because my show was an internet radio show, and he said, you know, an internet radio show, if it's a standalone on the internet and that's it, is never going to build an audience. And because internet is just kind of an auxiliary to real radio, is the way he put it. Well, either that afternoon or the next day, I got a reply from the other one. And his reply was, "You don't have a snowball's chance in hell." And he gave the same reason. I have, over the years, come to call these guys radio insultants instead of consultants. Well, we're 10 years down the road now. I didn't have a prayer. I didn't have a snowball's chance in hell. But I also didn't have a choice. I was sitting in a war zone. And if I was going to broadcast at all, it had to be over the internet. And there was no way for me to be broadcasting over, as they called it, real radio. 10 years down the road, I can't even remember these guys' names. Terrestrial radio is scrambling around, struggling. It's in full retreat, struggling to survive right now. Internet radio, on the other hand, has grown and grown and grown, consistently and explosively grown. And like I said, I didn't have a snowball's chance in hell, but here I am. And this show is number one for UFO talk shows on the planet. And the reason is because of you. You have made this happen. But that's why the graphic on our TV station there is a picture of me standing in flames, and the caption under it says, "No chance in hell." Okay, but, you know, no choice either. And so here we are. Well, I was in Kosovo for a long time, almost 3 years. And winter was coming again, and winter was really severe in Kosovo. I mean, really severe. And kind of like some places here in the United States have experienced this winter, you know, with the worst winter that they've had in 100 years. No, they have that every year in Kosovo. And so as the snow began to fall, I began to think about another long, bitter, hard winter with no electricity. Because when things begin to ice up, the electricity goes out, and that's it for weeks at a time. And so I decided, you know what, I'm going to move to the country. I'm getting out of Pristina. I'm going to move to one of these little villages right out here outside of Pristina. And I had to get special permission for that because I was in a top position in headquarters, and the rule was that we had to live in Pristina. But I got special permission to move to a little village just outside of Pristina. It happened to be a Serb enclave. The Serbs in Kosovo had to live in these enclaves, these little tight communities, completely surrounded by the NATO military, because if the NATO military was not there, then the allies of the United States of America and the allies of the UK, the allies of NATO, which were the Kosovar Albanians, would have slaughtered them. They made a habit of killing Serbs wherever they could find them. And so the Serbs lived in these little enclaves, and I moved to one. And one of the best moves I ever made, because out there in the country, I was able to purchase a wood stove. The most prized possession I had while I was in Kosovo was that wood stove. With that wood stove, I was able to cook. I was able to heat the house. It was absolutely marvelous because I was spending the first winter that I had spent in Kosovo. I had already been through one extreme winter in Kosovo, and now I'm spending the first one where I was actually warm. I was comfortable. And so that wood stove was my prized possession. But I found out something. I found out something very, very important. I found out that the government of Serbia was paying the long-distance bills for anyone living, any Serb living in one of these Serb enclaves in Kosovo, because they were besieged. They were besieged. And because the Serb government had agreed to pull their military and their police out of Kosovo, they had agreed to that, basically had been forced to agree to it. But because they had, they were now paying for the long-distance calls for anyone in these Serb enclaves. And the house I was in had a telephone. Now, there wasn't anybody in Serbia that I wanted to call, but I did know some people in the United States I wanted to interview for my show. And, of course, we were not able to buy any broadcast equipment, any professional equipment. We were in a war zone. You could buy the necessities of life. You could buy food. You could buy clothes. But any of these trinkets, you know, like a digital hybrid telephone interface, that sort of thing, was not available. So there was another friend headed back to the United States. I gave him some money. I told him to go to Radio Shack. And I said, go in there and tell them you want to buy a telephone pickup. That's what they're called. And it's just a little black, little circular black plastic piece of equipment. It's got a suction cup on it. And you stick that suction cup on the telephone receiver. and it has a cord coming off of it that you plug into a tape recorder or your computer, and it picks up whatever's going on that telephone receiver. Well, as you know, if you speak into a telephone receiver, you can hear yourself in the earpiece. So this little pickup would pick up both what I said as well as what the guest said. And there's a photograph of me doing my very first telephone interview that I ever did for the Kevin Smith Show. And in that photograph, you can see the little black telephone pickup attached to the telephone receiver. And it's very unsophisticated. The audio quality is not very good, but it's what was available. And so the very first time I did a telephone interview with anybody was with a guest in Houston, Texas. And I used this very primitive means of recording the call. And Slobodan Milosevic paid for the call, unbeknownst to him. There is more than one way, you see, to skin a cat. So that's how it all started, folks. That is how it began. And it has just developed step by step since then until now, and it's still developing step by step. We have to take a break, and when we come back, I'm going to tell you about what happened last weekend. And it's one of those step-by-step developments. Okay, over this past weekend, we had an exciting time because what happened was weird even for me. It started on Friday evening just before showtime, and I got a call from one of America's top scientists, somebody that I have talked to before, and he told me that he had photographic evidence of something really, really serious. I would classify it as either a terrorist act, and I haven't seen the photos, but either a terrorist act or something extremely criminal, if not a terrorist act. And it was serious enough that he had forwarded his photographic evidence to the Department of Defense, and he asked me in the course of the conversation, "Do you think I am in any danger?" I said, well, I wouldn't see how you could really be in any danger unless what you have in those photographs, if it were by some chance, I'm not accusing anything, but I said if it happened to be a false flag operation and you got photographic evidence of it, then yeah, you could be in some danger. And he said, well, I guess I better record my story then before something happens, and you know, just in case I happen to step in front of a bus or something. I said, yeah. And he said, could you help me do that? I said, sure. And I said, but I have to go on the air in just a very few minutes now. Let me call you tomorrow, and we'll either do that tomorrow or we will set a time to do it. And he said, okay. So I did Friday night show, and then on Saturday I called him as I had arranged, and he was busy working on a report that he had for a government project that he was working on, and he said, look, let's do this tomorrow. I said, okay, and I hung up. Shortly after that, my internet went dead. Now, we're on cable here. Internet went dead. Well, I was thinking, okay, well, they're working on the cable out there and somewhere, and it'll be back up in a little bit. Well, in 3 hours, it wasn't back up. And so we called the cable company. And we went through a lot of rigmarole with them, and they finally got a supervisor on the phone who was sensible. And he said, yeah, he said, the problem doesn't appear to be your place, so we need to get maintenance out there. We'll try to have this back up by morning. If it's not back up, we'll have the daytime supervisor give you a call in the morning and give you an update, but we'll try to get this back up as quick as we can. So, okay. Well, Sunday morning, no call came from the supervisor, and at 11 o'clock in the morning, the internet was still dead. And so we called again. Went through all the same stuff again. And finally they said, okay, well, we'll send somebody out. He'll be out there between 1 and 3. So the guy comes out, and I explained the problem to him, and I explained, look, we have problems with this going down all the time. And we really, really want this fixed. If I'm going to have to pay for it every month, I want it to work. And he said he fully understood. So he checked on the junction box outside, and then he came inside, and he said, well, he said, there are eight customers, you're one of them, there are eight customers that all come off the same tap. All of the others are working, but yours isn't. He said, I need to check the junction box inside here to see if there's a problem there. So he goes in the closet and does whatever they do, hooked his little device to it with the meter, and he comes out shaking his head, and he says, well, I don't understand it. He said, you do have a signal coming in, but he said, this thing is spiking at intervals. It's spiking at intervals, going way off the charts. And I said, well, how is it possible that mine is spiking and the seven others that are tapped into the same tap don't have that? We discussed that, and I proposed to him a possibility, and he said, yes, that could do it. And it's not any kind of physical device that somebody would install. But I described for him a possibility, and he said, yeah, that could happen. That could do it. So he said, let me go out to the truck and get something. And so he does, and he comes back in, and he shows me this little thing, and he says, now this will attenuate the spikes. So he installed it, but the internet still wouldn't come back up. And the reason was that those spikes had knocked out, had burned out the cable modem. So we had to buy a new modem. Don't you find it just a little bit interesting that all that happened right after I made arrangements with this scientist to record his story about this evidence that he says he has, that he's turned over to the Department of Defense? And no one else whose service is coming off the same junction had a problem. Just this one. Just this one was spiking. Now, the only way that could happen, as far as I know, and I've talked it over with people who are in the know about these sort of things, is if that was coming from the cable company and they had it targeted to the IP address of the modem. In other words, it was a targeted hit. Can I prove that? No, I can't prove it. Do people who understand cable think that's possible? The ones I talked to said it is. Just very interesting. But what it meant was that I was not able to install I couldn't do anything on the internet. I wasn't able to install the software that we got for upgrading the members area. Couldn't do that. I couldn't update the K-Pods. I got that finally updated on Sunday night because Sunday afternoon this technician was able to get us back online. And so we got the K-Pods updated on Sunday afternoon or Sunday night. But just a really interesting one more step in the process. Over the 10 years I've been doing this show, we've been hit by so many different things in so many different ways that there's no way that you could say it's coincidence. There is no possibility that it's coincidence. It is targeted, and it's designed to keep you from being exposed to this information. But we're still here. And good Lord willing, and the creek don't rise, 10 years from now, we'll still be here, bigger and better. Every time we get hit, every time we are under attack, we come out of it bigger and stronger than before. You would think these morons would figure out it ain't working. We're going to open the telephone lines and allow you to join us here when we come back from this next break. Well, when we come back from this next break, I'm going to tell you about the zombie satellite, and then we'll open the telephones. And if there are any of you that listened to this show back in Kosovo, when I was in Kosovo, I want to hear from you tonight. I really do. And even if you've never called in, I'd really love to hear from you. I know we still have some folks that listen to this show that started listening when I was in Kosovo. And it would be just wonderful if we could hear from 1, 2, 3, 5, 10, but at least one, someone from Kosovo. Doesn't mean that we're going to limit the calls to the Kosovo people, though. We'll take the calls from anybody. We'll be back right after this. Welcome back. We have a caller online, and caller, just hang on just a moment. I'll be with you. But first, let me tell you about this satellite. Galaxy 15 is a communications satellite, and the article that I'm looking at says that they lost control, lost contact with it after a solar flare, and they think that solar flare fried its brain. But what's really, really puzzling them, it's continuing to fly, and it says the satellite is still on with its C-band telecommunications payload still functioning, even as it has left its assigned orbital slot. And what's confounding the scientists is that even though the satellite is toast, it continues to operate at full power, but with nobody telling it what to do. It's out of control, but it has taken over its own operations. Sound like HAL the computer from 2001? A Space Odyssey. It's weird. Caller, you're live on the Kevin Smith Show. Your first name and from where are you calling?
Yeah, Kevin, this is Rusty from Michigan.
Hi, Rusty.
Good. I just went, was you aware, I'm talking to a couple other members in the chat area, and they can't get to TV either.
No, it is broadcasting, and there are people watching it, so no idea.
Well, I'm in Scotland, I'm in Michigan, so I don't know what it was, but anyway, we're listening to you on Indy anyway, but I had a question. By the way, this information you've been giving, I like it. I didn't know how you had got started, you know, and that's quite interesting.
Well, be sure you watch the latest show. You'll see some of those photographs.
Okay. Mm-hmm. Now, I had a question. I went back. I didn't get to see James Horak's last show live, so I went back and saw it in the members area.
Mm-hmm.
What is his connection with, is it Roswell?
His story is that when he was 4 years old, and he's told this in two different shows, his mother was moving to Texas from New Mexico, and he was 4 years old. He was in the car with his mother and an uncle, and they were headed towards Texas. And just before they got out of New Mexico, UFOs appeared, shut the car down. They pulled over to the side of the road, and he describes these, what we would call grays. And they began to levitate his mother and were starting to take her out through the window. And he said he had this extreme revulsion to them and anger at what they were doing, and he had that reaction, the grays began to sense it, and he said they really didn't like it. They left his mother alone, and basically, and this is my characterization of it, they ran away. And they got on their ship, and he was just looking at those ships, their UFOs, there were two of them, with this anger and revulsion, and they began to wobble and act like they were malfunctioning. And these are the craft that went down in New Mexico that became known as the Roswell incident. That's the story.
So they are the same craft then, huh?
Well, that's what he says. Yeah.
Huh. That's quite a connection.
Yeah. Yeah. Huh. And you know, the email reaction to that has been kind of evenly divided. Some people are like, "Wow, that is so cool," and some people are like, "Wow, I couldn't believe that in 100 years, you know, but that's normal.
Huh? And one more question about when you started.
Mm-hmm.
How? I don't know how to ask this. I guess how much money did it take to actually get the thing going? Like you got it going now?
Zero.
Zero.
Zero. I use the United Nations computers.
That's quite amazing. And now you're the biggest one on UFO on the internet. That's quite amazing.
Yeah.
Must be your looks.
Oh, yeah. That's what it is. I have a face made for radio.
All right.
Thanks for the call.
Thanks, Kevin.
All right. Yeah. Okay, look, let's get the telephone numbers up here, and let's get the telephone numbers out on the radio. The main number here in the studio is 623-444-5889, and the toll-free number in the USA and Canada, the toll-free number is 888-223-4599. If you are outside of the USA and you're outside of Canada, you can use our flash message option on the website. Just go over to my website, scroll down, and you'll see where it says flash message. Just click on that, and you will be able to send me a flash message. But you have to be outside the USA or outside of Canada. Tim in the Netherlands says, "Happy 10th complete revolution around the sun." Thanks, Tim. I appreciate it. Let's see. Ross in the United Kingdom is asking if we're having problems with the video feed. It's not working for me tonight. I have talked to a couple of people in the members area that are having the same problem. Justin TV says it can't find the stream. Well, I'm not surprised, but no, we are broadcasting, and there are people watching. So I don't know what the situation is there. We'll check into it, but I'm not surprised. You know, I announced that I would be telling tonight what happened over the weekend, so I'm not surprised if they're interrupting it again. Okay, caller, you're live on the Kevin Smith Show. Your first name and from where are you calling?
Hey, good evening, Kevin. It's Terry from Ohio.
Hello, Terry.
How you doing?
Doing good.
Happy anniversary.
Well, thank you. I appreciate it.
I was thinking, I have a couple of things on my mind. I know Beck, you said once, you know, when you was a cop that somebody would threaten you. And, you know, you told them that, what were you waiting for, an invitation?
An appointment.
My phrase was, okay, hard guy, you know what you're saying in between me and you? Nothing but air and opportunity.
Mm-hmm. yeah, my standard, if somebody says, you know, man, one of these days I'm going to kick your rear. My standard phrase was, what are you waiting for, an appointment? You don't have to have an appointment. I'm standing here right now.
Yeah, I heard that phrase, you know, nothing between us but air and opportunity. And it always stuck with me. I thought it was quite cute.
Yeah.
I wanted to, talk about a little bit about NASA, you know, where, you know, I said that, it, you know, it's basically obsolete.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, it was just a front for America and pretty much, I guess, the rest of the world. And that we do have other craft, and although even though it's only $18 billion, you know, it's no longer serves its, you know, it served its purpose. And I think Barack Obama kind of gave that away in his speech about pretty much shutting down NASA, with saying, you know, we got control of low Earth orbit, you know. That's old news. We've been to the moon. That's old news. You know, we got to concentrate on, you know, deep space, you know. And I think, you know, he's kind of hitting that, like, you know, kind of read between the lines. You know, maybe that's, you know, where we're at actually now. You know, we have something better. You know, and they're going to bring it to light, you know.
Maybe.
Yeah.
However, he increased their budget.
Yeah.
Barely.
Yeah, I heard that.
Yeah, just barely. You know that I have not agreed with you that we should close NASA. I campaigned hot and heavy that their budget should be doubled. And they should be told, let's get on with this, and you know, let's do some space exploration. If that happened, I would still be campaigning pro NASA.
Yeah.
What we have now.
You said that, you know, you know, the people. I mean, they're behind. The military is behind NASA too, anyways. You know, that's why it's so screwed up, and you know. And it stands for never a straight answer. But I think at a point, just like these stealth aircraft and, you know, the U-2 and, you know, sooner or later, you know, it's time to break it out, you know, and it just, I think they're just building up to the opportunity to, you know, show society that, you know, scientists, you know, now have and been working on something better than, you know, fuel propellant machinery.
Well, that may be what's about to happen. I suspect there will not be any breaking it out into the public view. There will simply be a crippled NASA. I don't suspect that they're going to unveil to you, to me, or anybody else the fantastic capabilities that the military is alleged to have in space. They're not going to show it to you. And the problem now is this. NASA has no real purpose. No matter how many pretty words they put on it, there's no purpose for NASA to exist if they're not going to do manned space exploration. Everything else that NASA's doing that is not manned space exploration can be done without NASA. But yeah. manned space exploration is what NASA was built for, and that's their purpose, and that's what they should be doing. So without them, without the astronauts, they have no purpose. Here's the problem, though. What this means, since they really have no purpose for the future, a lot of platitudes, but no purpose. If that continues, then there will come a point where Congress will say, why? We're just not going to fund this anymore. And they will close it. Now, when NASA closes, even though they have that tag that, you know, never a straight answer, even though they have that tag, they are the only ones who have released to us photographs about the amazing anomalies out there on the planets. Some of them they airbrushed, and some of them they didn't. So some of them got through. Some of the anomalies got through, and we were able to see them. Who do you suspect will do it once NASA is gone? You think the U.S. Air Force is going to show you? You think the Navy's going to show you?
I think probably, you know, astronomers and stuff like that.
Nope.
Maybe not licensed and granted astronomers, but there's all kinds of amateur astronomers get information out.
None of them, absolutely no amateur, has the telescopes powerful enough to get those close-up photos of anomalies like we've been getting from NASA. Nobody.
Yeah.
Now, the astronomers who do have access to that,
from Hubble and stuff like that,
you're not going to get it from Hubble. If NASA's gone, well, Hubble's on its last legs anyway.
Well, they just totally rebuilt it. It's supposed to be able to last again, you know, I think, for another quite a long time again, you know.
And it'll never be repaired again.
No. But, okay. I mean, they did recently repair it.
They did.
That's better.
But, Terry, listen. NASA runs Hubble. If there's no NASA, there's no one getting the photographs and getting them to the public. Okay? Without NASA, you have no access to space. None. Mm-hmm. The astronomers are not going to tell you because the astronomers are under a global shut-up order.
Mm-hmm.
You know?
I think that they're still going to be able to sneak stuff out. And there's other countries that don't care about what, you know, the United States, you know, they're not going to make or break other countries' astronomers and stuff like that.
You don't think so?
And
Terry, listen, you haven't been listening to this show.
Well, I know they got a lot of power, but still a lot of the countries are coming out with stuff. I don't think the United States wants them to.
Well, there are countries that are coming out with stuff that perhaps the United States doesn't want them to, but I'm going to tell you something. The astronomers on this planet are under a global structure. If they speak, they can literally disappear. That's not a joke. That's a fact.
Yeah, I mean, just you know, just like that story you brought up with that head of NASA in I forget what country, Singapore or whatever you said.
Bulgaria.
Yeah, you know. So yeah, they do have a long arm and reach, you know.
You don't have to make but one of those guys disappear. You don't have to make but one of them have a miserable life. And the word spreads through the astrophysicist and astronomer community, and nobody is going to talk. So NASA, never a straight answer. Yeah, they earned that. They worked hard to get that. But I'm going to tell you something. They also have been the only link we had to space, the only link you and I had to, and the only access we had to photographs that did show those anomalies. And that's going to go away if NASA goes away. Terry, I got to run. Thanks for the call. 623-444-5889 or toll free at 888-223-4599. If you are one of those people that has been with us since Kosovo, give us a call. Let us know that you've been listening, that you heard some of those shows back in Kosovo. I know there are some still out there. And I know that because I've been doing this for 10 years, I know that a great many of those are just like the majority of most people on this planet, and that is their fingers just tremble and quiver when they think about calling the radio show, and they just can't make their fingers do it. They get afraid. Well, I don't bite, so give me a call on the phone. You talk to your mom on the phone, right? Well, just consider me mom for the next few minutes and give mom a call, all right? 623-444-5889 or 888-223-4599. Let's see what we have here. Your overview, this is from Davey in the United Kingdom. Your overview of events relating to how you establish the show goes to show that when you're faced with extreme situations, as in your case, you can either implode or become negative, or connect with an aspect of your being that can become of extreme benefit to others. And that's what you've done. The same spirit continues to infuse us all through your non-biased coverage of subjects that really matter. Happy 10th birthday. Thank you, Davey. Well, Davey, thank you. I appreciate it. That's very encouraging. Yeah, you know, I don't know where I heard it. I'm not sure that I can't say that I originated this. I may have heard it somewhere, but it goes like this. I must do this thing. Because I must do it, I can do it. The only decision left is, will I do it? If you must, you can. If you can, will you? And if you will, you will succeed. There's nothing you must do that you can't do. The only question is, will you? All right. Caller, you're live on the Kevin Smith Show. Your first name and from where are you calling?
Hey, Kevin, it's Mike from Kentucky.
Hi, Mike.
Here's another one that can't see the TV feed, and one in Texas that I talk to all the time, he can't see it either.
That's good, but there's nothing I can do about it, Mike.
Yeah. Huh?
I said, that's good, it's interesting, but there's nothing I can do about it.
Yeah, I realize that, mm-hmm. But you kept talking about people seeing the pictures, like you're showing that they're there.
They are.
Your feed's going out.
They are.
Yeah. I wish I was one of them.
Well, sorry.
I'm having to listen to it.
Oh, my goodness. Listen to a radio show? Oh, Mike, tell me it ain't so.
That is awful, Kevin. At this day and time, we'd have to listen to a radio
show. I just cannot believe the adversity.
Yeah, you know, you were talking about NASA and to Terry, and unfortunately, NASA is a public link, but you and I both know that NASA doesn't give the public but just breadcrumbs compared to what they receive.
That's true, but without them, we won't even get breadcrumbs.
Yeah, we have to depend on our brothers, and they're not talking.
Yeah, I think what's happened to NASA is tragic. In fact, what's happened to NASA would be comic if it were not so tragic. You could put that on Saturday Night Live and people would laugh at it. And yet that has become the policy of the United States.
I think it's possible, Kevin, that we may be weaned off of all this stuff because of so-called prophetic events, and they're trying to get us out of that idea until they see if things are going to settle down and if we survive it or not.
Well, maybe. Maybe. But, I mean, if those prophetic events are going to come true, if they are, then they're going to come true whether you have NASA or don't have NASA, and it won't make any difference whether we know or don't know about these anomalies.
Well, think about something for a minute. The joint programs between the United States and Russia that have alleged to have reached out to Mars and maybe even other planets mm-hmm. to colonize.
Mm-hmm.
These places are going to take a big click too if this thing comes through here, and so I don't know if there's any place within the inner planets on this side of, say, Jupiter that would be safe.
Yeah, but I mean, whether we know about it or don't know about it, whatever's going to happen is going to happen.
Well, that's absolutely correct. And if we knew about it, if one of us or two of us had an inside link, maybe we'd get on one of those ships going out to the other side of Jupiter.
Well, we might. We might. Yeah.
But it's just a lot of speculation, and I'm like you. I wish I could be up there at your party, you know, on December 21st, 2012. But,
Mike, you want to hang on through the break?
Sure will.
All right. We'll be back, folks, right after this. Back to the Kevin Smith Show, now originating from the Phoenix, Arizona area, originally from Pristina, Kosovo. On the line with me is Mike from Kentucky. Mike, you had just mentioned you wish you could be at the party December the 21st, 2012. If you save your pennies and make your plans, you may just be able to make it.
Well, we'll see. A lot of things can happen between now and 2012. You know that.
Yeah, you know, as long as there's still a Bangkok, Thailand, December the 21st, 2012, and as long as I'm still alive and free, then that's where I'm going to be. And I'm going to host a party in Bangkok for Kevin Smith Show audience, and everybody is invited. Okay.
What I was just fixing to say, if something for those that can't make it, then you could do a broadcast there.
Oh, I intend to.
Yeah.
I intend to, but you won't get to see it on December the 21st, 2012.
Okay.
Because December the 21st, 2012 will happen the day before. It happens a day earlier there.
Yeah, you see it the 19th.
Mm-hmm. So what we're going to do is we're going to, well, on the 20th. So what we're going to do is we'll record the show from there, and then on the I'm not going to let you know until the 21st. On the 20th, I'm not going to let you know that we made it.
Gotcha.
I'm going to let you worry on this side of the planet.
Well, I'll tell you what. We're not going to waste a lot of time worrying over here in this house. I'll let the others do the worrying, you know.
And, well, that's
I'm not going to put the cart in front of the horse. I'm going to keep the cart right back there where it's supposed to be so I can see what's going on.
Well, that's good. I don't think worry is a good plan at all for anybody. And I invite you to come to the party, and let's don't worry together. All right, Mike, I want to thank you for the call. I have to move along because we've got to take some more calls here, or at least open the lines where we can get some more calls. And let me check the flash message board real quick and see if we've had any flash messages come in. No, we have not. Yes. No. No, we have not. Okay. 623-444-5889 is the main number. You can call that from anywhere on planet Earth and possibly planet Nibiru. The reason I say possibly is I don't know if Nibiru is close enough yet that they can make a mobile phone call from there. But anyway, when they get into range, they certainly can start calling us, and we'll take calls from there as well. The toll-free number, 888-223-4599. Caller, you're live on the Kevin Smith Show. Your first name, and from where are you calling?
Kevin, this is Brent from Wyoming.
Hi, Brent.
I have a question for you.
All right, I have an answer for you.
Whatever happened to the scientist from last weekend?
I have been in touch with him, he's a little bit cold feet at this moment. I don't mean he's chickened out, but he's not at this point really ready to go ahead and record. But let me say this: this was not planned as a broadcast. This
no,
was
I,
just
I understand that.
Just something a safeguard for him.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
So, in other words, he's feeling a little pressure from somewhere, probably.
Maybe it could be that nobody has exerted any pressure. But just the knowledge of what happened with the internet, because I was in touch with him Sunday as soon as the internet was back up, and so just the knowledge of that may be enough to sort of rock the boat a little bit.
Yeah. Okay, that's what I wanted to know.
Yeah. Okay, thanks.
Bye.
Bye. All right, 623-444-5889 or 888-223-4599. You know, if there is like a sub-story to go with everything the Kevin Smith Show is about, the sub-story, you got a flavor of it when I talked about how we started. The sub-story, the river that flows beneath the ground here, is that from the beginning, from the very beginning, there have been so-called powers that be, and some of them I knew, and some of them I looked face to face, were not happy about this show from the beginning. They were not happy about it. They are still not happy about it, and we do get some opposition. The other side of that coin is there are people on the inside of the powers that be that are very happy about this show, and some of them are great fans of this show. Caller, you are live on the Kevin Smith Show. Your first name and from where are you calling?
Hello, Kevin. It's Haya from Victoria, British Columbia.
Hello, Haya.
Hi. You know what? When you were talking about NASA, and it is a terrible shame, you know, I totally agree with you in that area. But you know what? There's another area we could start going to and do a little bit more research, because I think that would also hold the answers of outer space.
What's that?
And I think that would be the crop circles.
Well, you know, it could be. The problem with the crop circles is that like the UFOs, we get to the end of the data, and there's precious little data. And so then there's all this speculation about what it all means. I think it's quite clear that these crop circles have a meaning. But then what is that meaning? And, you know, it's pretty difficult to decipher it. And there's a lot of speculation.
There was a few that have been deciphered, and I think mm-hmm. Jamie Masson, he has. There was one that was, you know, that when we sent NASA out very first, we send a message out, right?
Mm-hmm.
And it said that we were humans from Earth and what we looked like and where Earth was. And apparently, a few years ago, one was sent back.
Mm-hmm.
And beside it was another one beside it mm-hmm. was with an alien face with information on it.
Yeah.
And it was read that the message that was read, I mean, it was only because we are in this present time that it would have been able to be deciphered to start off with.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that was pretty interesting. And, you know, it's... the problem is, though, that that's one out of maybe 10,000 crop circles that have happened. That's one that has been somewhat intelligible.
When the crop circles first started coming out,
mm-hmm.
and a lot of people were taking notice, and a book was published at that point, and it was called The Gift.
Mm-hmm.
And what it was who was the man that wrote it? What it was is that a man, who I think he was an engineer, had gone over them. He deciphered them, and he took them as schematics. And then when you look at this book, it's got the crop circles that are actually schematics. And when you start taking it and putting it together, it actually is an engine.
That's interesting. I'm not familiar with this book.
Yeah, it's just extremely interesting.
What's the name of the book?
Okay, let me just see.
Oh, The Gift, I think you said.
It's called The Gift, and... Okay, it's by Doug Ruby. And it's called The Gift, The Crop Circles Deciphered. I've had this for a while, but it was with the very first crop circles that came up.
Mm-hmm.
And it's very interesting. If you take a look at it, I'm still waiting to get people to take it and actually make the schematics, the pictogram, and then make it into the machine that they're supposed to be. It's very interesting. It's worth looking into.
Well, I appreciate it. I will look into that. I've made a note of it, and I'll do some searching on the Internet as soon as the show is over tonight, and I'll take a look at it.
Yeah, it's really interesting thing to look, because then, you know what, then there's this connection between other planets, Earth, and us, and mm-hmm. the crop circles are maybe the answer.
Well, I do think that the crop circles do need some serious investigation and study and decipherment. I don't think they've received near enough serious study. One of the things that people always say is, well, yeah, but you know, it's a bunch of people at nighttime and they have boards on their feet and they're tromping down these crop circles. Well, there are some of those, and those are quite evident that is how they were made when you run across those, because the forensic evidence, the trace evidence, is different. But the ones that were not made by feet with boards on them have trace evidence that is otherworldly. In terms of our physics, the trace evidence shows that we do not possess the physics to have produced that crop circle. So it's pretty interesting. Haya, I have to run along, but thank you so much for the call.
You're welcome. Have a good evening.
All right. The crop circles, I think, probably hold more promise than the study of UFOs. They're just not quite as thrilling for a lot of people. All right, caller, you're live on the Kevin Smith Show. Your first name and from where are you calling?
Hi, Kevin. This is Ryan in Washington.
Hi, Ryan.
Well, happy 10th anniversary.
Thanks.
That was an interesting show tonight.
Thank you.
I wanted to ask you a question. You know, this spilled on there in the Gulf. I wonder if there's a possibility. You know, when Richard Sauter was on and he was talking about that underground bases could be used in certain oil platforms, do you think there's a possibility that there's more to this than what meets the eye?
No. I don't think it's a possibility at all. I think it's absolutely certain that there's more than meets the eye here.
There's something strange going on with that, and I don't mean to get out into politics, but it seems like the Obama administration has been kind of quiet and hasn't really, I don't know what they're going to do down there. I just read that there are some dolphins now that are washing up on shore, anyways, I've enjoyed listening to you since I've been. I didn't listen to you at the very beginning, but I want to bring out something that's a little bit positive.
All right.
We were talking earlier about NASA, and I agree that there could be a lot more done with that. But a little bit of a half glass half full thing here is that there is a increasing in the private industry.
Do you want to hang on through the break, Ryan?
Sure.
All right. We'll be back, folks, right after this. Welcome back to the Kevin Smith Show, and we have Ryan on the line. Ryan, we had to cut you off because the break was taking over, but the floor is yours. You had a thought on your mind.
Yeah. Well, I got so many thoughts that it's kind of hard to fit them all into my one phone call, so instead of going off on a tangent, I guess I wanted to talk to you about the Gulf thing.
I think something's up there.
Yeah, I just don't seem like anybody really knows what to do. The oil's still coming out of the ground, and it's starting to it's getting pretty bad down there. And I don't know. Does anybody know what to do?
No.
Hey, but I'll let the next caller come in. And Kevin, I was going to ask you: do you think you might be able to go into after hours tonight?
After hours? Well, I don't know. We might try that. It will be in the I'll go into after hours just a little bit and see, you know, if there are any calls. We'll do it.
I was going to see if you could do that because some callers some people might have missed the first 10 minutes of the show. All right. Well, keep up the good work, and you take care.
Thanks for the call. 623-444-5889, and the answer is yes, we'll go into after hours for a few minutes. We'll see what happens. You have to be in the members area to be able to hear that. And what we'll do is we will stop the video feed and restart it. We have to do that. And maybe those who are not able to get the video right now will be able to. The telephone lines are open. 623-444-5889. That's the main number. The toll-free number in the USA and Canada, 888-223-4599. We have a flash message from Kevin in Australia, and he says, "Hi, Mr. Kevin Smith. Congratulations on your 10th year birthday, and hope you have many more. Great show yesterday with Mr. Bill Burns and all the others who do work to free POWs around the world. And we should never forget to remember all the ones who never came home." And I agree with that. I concur. Then his question, what's one of your many shows over the last 10 years that surprised you? Oh, man, there have been so many. I'll give you two real quick, and then we'll take a call. The first one would be when I said to Michio Okaku, and this is not the first one that surprised me, but the first one I'm going to tell you about. When I said to him, "There are no laws of physics. They're just descriptions of our current understanding of the way things work. And some smart person is going to come along and step right over those laws of physics, and we'll have brand new laws of physics." And he said, "Absolutely." It surprised me. That surprised me. He totally agreed with that. Another one is any show I've done with James Horak. James says something that surprises me in every show. every show there's something that catches me off guard and surprises me. All right, caller, you are live on the Kevin Smith Show. Your first name and from where are you calling?
This is Charles from Nibiru.
Well, Charles, so the planet has finally gotten close enough.
I'm getting through a little bit.
Yeah, okay. I believe I recognize the voice, and I think maybe New Mexico instead of Nibiru. Is that right?
Actually, it is a little closer to New Mexico, I suppose.
Yeah. Charles, what's on your mind this evening?
Oh, I just wanted to get my 2 cents in and congratulate you on your 10 years on the show and hope that I can call you in 10 years and congratulate you again.
Well, thank you. I hope you don't wait 10 years to call me again, though.
No.
Okay. Yeah, it's been a long haul, but it's been a good one. And I'll tell you, that it's been interesting. More fun than a roller coaster.
Well, if I want to hear a surprising interview or something that is just really totally off the mainstream, I can always tune in, and you never disappoint.
Well, thank you. I appreciate that. That's our goal. Charles, thank you so much for the call.
Well, thanks for being there, and keep it up.
All right. And, I don't know who your leader is on Nibiru, but give him my best regards.
I will give leader the best regards.
Okay, thank you. Okay, well, there's one of the surprises right there. Oh, my. Okay, let's see. Umberto from Mexico, in questions of science, the authority of 1,000 is not worth the humble reasoning of a single individual. According to Galileo. Happy anniversary, Kevin. Well, thank you, Umberto. The authority of thousands, the opinion of thousands, doesn't make something true. You know that, don't you? That's what that refers to, and that was Galileo that said that. You can have, a billion people who have a certain opinion about something. It doesn't make it true. It may make it a political reality, but it doesn't make it an actual reality. And I guess Galileo would know because, he was trying to convince people to look through his telescope and see that those lights in the sky are spheres and that they are in rotation around the sun, or in orbit around the sun. And he was having a very difficult time with that because there were literally hundreds of thousands, if not millions, of clergy that were saying that's of the devil. And he got into trouble because he told the truth. Caller, you're live on the Kevin Smith Show. Your first name and from where are you calling?
Hi, Kevin. It's Jackie from Florida.
Hi, Jackie.
I wanted to wish you a happy anniversary, and I sure do enjoy your shows. And it was delightful hearing about how you started, and I can fully appreciate your wood stove story.
Let me tell you this. Before I moved to the country, I was in an apartment in the city. And you can't have it's impossible. You cannot have a wood stove in the apartments.
Mm-hmm.
And they were all electric, only there's no electricity. So I would come home, and on my way home, I would stop at a little store just a few doors from my apartment building. And they sell something over there called chisti alcohol. That means cleaning alcohol.
Whoa.
Okay, it's not for drinking.
I mean, right.
It'll kill you if you drink it. But it's really, really strong alcohol. It's the kind when you open the little bottle, the fumes coming out of it will make your eyes water.
Yes.
So what you do...
Moonshine.
Oh, man. So anyway, what you do with it, I'd buy four bottles, and it would cost me the equivalent of about one American dollar. So when you get into the apartment and you light your candle... then you take a big wad of toilet paper. And, I mean, just wad it up, a big wad of it. And then you pour this cheesy alcohol into a pan and set it on the stove. And you put that wad of toilet paper in it. And you make sure that you shape it into kind of a cone.
Yes.
So that there's part of it sticking up above that alcohol.
The pan.
Okay. And then you go and you dry your hands real good. And make sure that you don't have any alcohol left on your hands. And,
sure.
And then you strike a match and you put it on the top of that little cone of toilet paper. Now, what that does, the toilet paper is a wick.
Yes.
Okay. If you don't do that, then the entire surface of the alcohol catches on fire. Okay.
Yeah.
So.
Like a little flambé for you.
Yeah. And that's how you make coffee and how you heat the apartment in those circumstances. We've run out of time. Jackie, thanks for the call. Well, folks, that's it. That's our 10th anniversary show. Thanks for being here. It's been fun. We're going into after hours in the members area, and we'll see. If somebody calls, we'll keep going for a little bit. Nobody calls, we'll shut it down. My friends call me Steel Eye, my enemies do too, and you can call me whatever you want. Just keep coming back again and again and again for another 10 years. Until next time, so long, everybody.